Increasingly, there is talk of reparations in the United States of America. The town, city, I should say, of Evanston, Illinois is very proud because they just became the first location, the first place to actually institute reparations. If you lived in Evanston, Illinois, between 1919 and 1969, they say you qualify for a $25,000 housing grant to use however you want. If you had a relative that lived in Evanston, Illinois, you qualify for that grant because they say there were housing regulations and stipulations that made it very difficult for Black Americans to own in the best neighborhoods. And so they want to make it up to everybody. They hope this can be done on a national level. Meanwhile, out in Oakland, California, they've put in place a lottery fund to help low-income residents. But here's the thing. Whites need not apply. You see, the city will only give it out to people that are African-American, indigenous, non-documented. It's pretty wild. If you're a poor Russian immigrant, forget about it. You're not getting anywhere in Oakland, California. But they're going to give out $500 a month for 18 months, no strings attached, but only if you are one of those people that they are profiling. I mean, I don't know. This is a city, right? This is a government choosing to exclude certain people based on race. That kind of seems like some sort of reverse racism or unconstitutional practice to me anyway. But here is the mayor of Oakland, Libby Schaaf, talking all about her grand plans.
Today, Oakland, California launches one of the largest guaranteed income demonstrations to date in the nation. 600 Oakland families will receive $500 a month for 18 months. Our vision is an Oakland that has closed the racial wealth gap and where all families thrive. And we believe that guaranteed income is the most transformative policy that can achieve this vision and whose time has come. We believe that poverty is not personal failure, it is policy failure. Oakland joins with cities across this great nation where DEP projects will be working in unison to create a body of evidence.
I've had enough of Libby. I think we get the picture. But she's blaming policy. Here's my question. Could it actually be poor, lousy policy promoted by the Democrat Party that has actually led to this wealth disparity? I wonder. Joining me right now is someone who makes personal responsibility and a commitment to helping others to help themselves is none other than the new congressman from Utah, Burgess Owens. Congressman, good to have you here. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. And it's so good to talk with you again, my friend. I really look forward to this for sure.
Well, I talked to you while you were running. I loved your message because your message is very empowering and very uplifting and really it stresses the importance of meritocracy and the American dream. But everything that I'm seeing right now coming out of, you know, places like Evanston and Oakland and other locations across the country, as well as our federal government, really smacks of handouts that I don't know will necessarily translate into better things. In fact, I'd argue it creates a kind of dependence. What's your thought on what's happening specifically in Oakland? And then we can get to Evanston.
Well, let's start off with looking at what Oakland is. It's a failure of a city. It has been for decades. It's a place where I played with the Raiders back with 30, 40 years ago, and it's gone downhill ever since because of the leadership there. And this is the same place, by the way, that a few years ago tried to put in something called Eubonics. It's a demeaning a process which these school teachers, because they weren't teaching our Black kids how to speak English, were trying to devalue a degree by saying, if you just learn how to speak Eubonics, which is a, I don't even know how to describe it. It's a crass English. It's part of this and that. It's nothing will ever get you moving forward. But this is the kind of place that we're looking at. It is a place that Evanston or Detroit or Oakland. It's amazing how they fail and then they lean hard into it. They try to make sure everybody else is doing exactly what they're doing. So, no, we're seeing here, Trish, what I call old school institutional racism. It's when you divide people based on color, and you give people dependent based on color, and you tell them that you cannot succeed because of your color. It is the most devious process that's going on, and unfortunately, the Democratic Party is leaning in big time real hard with it. So I look forward to chatting with you about this, because I grew up in a time when success was expected by our young people. That we had a generation that understood the greatness of our nation. And meritocracy was everything. Respect for God, country, family, women, and authority. And I'm a result of that. And my generation of kids that came through and succeeded in the 60s and the 70s and the early 80s. And unfortunately, my generation dropped the ball and allowed this hard left, the Marxist and socialists, to drive the narrative. And that's where we are today.
Let's talk about what's happened since I think government became more actively involved in the economic policy that they thought would help Black Americans. And I want to go back to the early 60s. I was looking at a chart in Bloomberg the other day. They had a chart on the wealth gap between Blacks and whites, and they showed that it had enlarged beginning in 1964. And they blamed, by the way, slavery for it. The idea was you need reparations to make up for this, because this gap is pretty extreme, they said, and it's been growing since the early 60s. And I thought, you know, what was it about, actually 67 specifically was the time they used. What was it about 1967 that would have created sort of this increased disparity between the haves and have-nots being Black and white? And I thought about Johnson and the war on poverty, which began in 1964. And of course, I thought about you, Burgess, because you and I have talked about this before. And in your view, that didn't do a darn thing to help Black Americans from an economic perspective.
No, it didn't. And I think, and this is why I'm so blessed to have been raised on the time I did. I grew up in the Deep South, Tallahassee in the 60s, days of KKK, Jim Crow, and segregation. But what was significant about that era was that even though we were not as a country assimilating, and that not only includes Blacks, but Germans, Italians, Polish, we all had our own communities. But what we had in common was we, first of all, loved our country. We believed in meritocracy. We had dads who came back from World War II and very proud of who we were, and we understood the threat of the hard left. We understood the threat of socialism and Marxism, and so we were taught to really love our nation. So the history is not being taught, because I think the greatest insult to my parents' generation and those before us is this idea that Blacks have been hapless, hopeless, waiting for white people to give us freedom in 1960. And it's the greatest lie ever been told. And that's what happens. We do not understand and learn our history. The history of my race, very simply, is one that, first of all, we came out of slavery. If you think about this, Trish, you come out of a life in which you've never, ever thought about having a family, never having a job, never having the day, even the ability to every single day wake up and pursue dreams. When that changes overnight, that race is going to be all into freedom. They're going to be all into everything that makes our country great, raising a family, building businesses, educating our kids. And that's what they leaned in hard to right after the Civil War. So we look at something like Tuskegee, for instance, started in 1882, Booker T. Washington. By 1905, sorry, it was a little bit late, it was 1870 in that range. By 1905, it was producing more self-made millionaires than Harvard, Yale, and Princeton combined. The little Black college back in Tuskegee. And here's what the left, and I can go through a litany of success stories by a community that turned within. And that's what we did. That's what the Italian community did. That's what the Jewish community did. We did not trust government, so we turned within. And here's the result of that. The 40s, 50s, and 60s, it was the Black community that led our country in the growth of the middle class, men matriculated from college, men committed to marriage over 70%, percentage of entrepreneurs over 40%. And that 40% of entrepreneurship led in 1960s to 50 to 60% of Black Americans across our country being part of the middle class. Black Americans, when I was growing up, is what the Asian American communities looked at today. We see nothing but, we see a lot of we see the American dream. We look at the Asian community, people who get an education, they build their business, they have a strong family, and they're respected by other Americans. That was the Black community in the 1960s, before the Democrats turned us upside down with these socialist welfare programs. And I just want to make this very, very clear also, Trish. It was not white supremacists that did my community in, that flipped us upside down, where now we have over 74% of our men not committed to marriage. We've gone from 40% of business ownership down to 3.8%. We have chaos and crime everywhere. Our kids not being educated. It was not white supremacists. It was Black elitists. It's elitists across the board that came, that look like me, talk like me, but give this dream that socialism is all that, it's a good thing, and turned us upside down by allowing policies by the Democratic Party to infestate our, to get into our community and turn us upside down. So I'm excited about where we are today, because we're having this conversation finally in the Black community, just like the Hispanic, the gay community. We are leaving the Democratic Party in droves, and it scares them to death because they're all about power and they're about to lose it as we drift toward our freedom and our opportunities and self-sufficiency, an idea that, yes, we are in control on our future based on what we do, our attitudes, our actions, and how we treat people. If we do bad things, we're not going to succeed in this country. It just doesn't work that way.
I want to get back to this idea of control in a second and ask you whether or not that's part of the theory behind reparations. And if you just give people a little bit, just enough, right, to keep them down, do they stay down and therefore continue to vote for you? But let me get to the family issue, because that has been a big platform for you. And a lot of studies have shown that one of the biggest single factors in a child's success and ability to go on to college and to earn a good living is coming from a two-parent household. Now, we can debate why that is. I mean, I would just say, you know, look, not everybody should be married, wants to be married. I get it. I'm not suggesting anybody stay in a bad marriage. However, for the benefit of the children, what you typically see is that they are better off because, I mean, I've got three of my own. I know that parenting is hard work. It's hard, you know, and you need somebody there to help you. You can't do everything yourself. And so having a unit, a family unit, is a big part of ensuring, I think, stability for the children. And so I suspect that's one of the reasons why they go on to do better things. But Burgess, Congressman, when you look at it, today's numbers, what you see is that roughly 40% of children are being born now to single mothers. I don't know how the statistics break down in terms of whether it's Black or white, but just the idea that kids are being born to single mothers, you compare and contrast it with, you know, the early 1960s, it was a tiny fraction of that. I want to say somewhere around 6%. Our producer right now is grabbing me the exact stats. But I mean, that's a huge increase.
It is. And what it shows is the success of the Marxist and socialist wing of the Democratic Party. What Americans need to understand, and this could be no better example of that in the history and the success of the Black community. Again, I grew up in that. I grew up where I was taught. My first exposure, Trish, my first exposure to white Americans didn't happen until I was 16 years old. So before that, my total experience was Black America. It was looking around me and seeing business ownership. It was seeing doctors, lawyers, a Black hospital. And the message from every teacher was, this is a country you can make it in. And here's why we could do that. Because there's four tenets that any person that comes to this country, no matter when they come here, what language they speak, if they tie into and commit to these tenets, they will become part of the middle class within a generation or less. And that is faith, education, the family unit, and free market. It's really that simple. And that's what the Black community was doing very, very well and succeeding in a very, very strong way. And we were doing it in a way because we have so much pride in ourselves. We were doing it because other people say we couldn't. The fact that a white person could tell me, for instance, I left Tallahassee to go to University of Miami. I was the third Black to get a scholarship there. And my major was marine biology.
Oh, my
biology.
Gosh, you're kidding.
Now, what drove me for 4 years to get that degree?
I mean, I just love marine biology. I grew up on the coast, so I didn't know that about you.
Okay.
Very cool.
Well, I grew up in Tallahassee on the coast there, the Gulf Coast. We had a chance to, as a family, again, a black family, segregated community. We grew up, my parents had a boat that we would go out and ski and fish and all that kind of stuff. And it wasn't unusual. Not that we were wealthy. We were just part of that, quote, middle class that represent the best of America. That is what drives us. And that's what the left, by the way, wants to keep us from. I just wonder if it's just a little quick story. So I went to the University of Miami. And even though I decided in my third year that I didn't want to go into marine biology anymore, I got my degree because when I left high school, there's a white guy who told me I couldn't do it. Now, I tell you the way my parents taught us. They tell you can't do it, you double down. So I lived in that library for 4 or 5 years. I lived there. If I wasn't playing football, I was in the library because I wanted to prove that I got wrong. That was the essence of my race. And we need to get back to that. Instead of embracing this idea, somebody tells you you're a failure, you accept it. And that's all reparation is, by the way. It is the most racist, demeaning concept in which somebody is telling you, based on your skin, you will never succeed. Based on your skin, you are an inferior person. White people are more privileged. They're more superior. They're more successful. Why? Because you have a black skin. And because 200 years ago, somebody you never knew was enslaved by somebody you never knew. It is a crazy concept, but it's based on this on the idea. And this is what I think is so important for American people to realize. what we're fighting is truly for the culture of our nation. You know, the idea that we have a Judeo-Christian nation is built on godly concepts that no matter how we worship him, we believe in a God. And therefore, every single generation gets better and better at seeing each other inside out versus outside in. That's who we are. No country in the history of mankind has done it better than we have. And we are proof of that. As we're sitting here, you and I talking right now, the way we are, I could have a business, you have a business, which we're talking freely, we're talking as peers. This would not have happened 50, 60 years ago when I was growing up. Blacks and white were not doing what you and I are doing right now. Blacks 60 years ago would never even think about being the president or vice president of this great country. And so what the left does is they steal our history, they turn it around, and they make everything based on our exterior differences. That is not American, and we can't allow it to continue to happen.
Look, I hear you, and I think that it's destructive because it sends a message to young Black Americans that you can't be something. When I think that we've proven as a society you can be a whole lot. Look, Burgess, you're a congressman from Utah. We have Kamala Harris as Vice President of the United States. We had Barack Obama as the president for 2 terms of the United States of America. I mean, I think it tells you that there is upward mobility. And I'm not saying that, you know, there aren't some bad people out there that are still racist in America. But fundamentally, you know, I think that we have shown there is a path forward to success. So how do you ensure that more and more Americans can access this? We've got the numbers. I was very close. How do you like this? In 1964, 7% of U.S. children were born outside marriage. Today, according to Heritage, and this is a little bit dated, this article, so the number could be higher, the number is 41%. And they're making the point that you have a society that's divided into two castes. And in the top half, you have children that are raised by married couples that are going on to seek higher education. In the bottom half, they're not. And again, you could go back to the war on poverty where you couldn't have a man in the house if you were going to collect a welfare check.
Boy, let's see if I can unload what you, because you said a lot. You said a lot just a few minutes ago. First of all, how do we get this back? It's something in our very foundation. Thomas Jefferson said, ignorant and free can never be. What the left understands is that if they can get us to be emotional and get away from critical thinking, they own us. And they've been going at us for decades. They understood a long, long time ago the way to turn our country around is to get within our educational system and like little termites. Destroy us from within. Do not teach free market. Teach our kids that socialism is really a cool thing. teach our kids that being a dad, being a father, a man who stands up and provides, protects for his family is really not a cool thing. So that's our biggest fight is we need to educate ourselves.
Oh, and by the way, can I just interject? Because I think on the women front, you've been sort of conditioned to think, and I say this for all women, black and white, you know, you don't need a man. You can do it on your own. You actually don't even need, you can go to a sperm bank and have a kid. You don't need a husband. You don't need any of that, right? You know, you are the be all end all. And I would just say that, look, we all need each other. And a mother needs a father, right, at home to help. And a father needs a mother to help with kids. And a husband needs a wife and a wife needs a husband. And we won't even get into the, you know, two husbands and two wives. But the point is, you are more powerful together in a family unit than you are apart.
From the very beginning, the greatest team ever put together in history of mankind was a husband and wife who loved each other, who partnered up, who could figure out how to take the differences and be patient and tolerant. And as they do that, they're showing their kids what it is to grow up and be successful, productive individuals. They see from their parents as they see, you know, imperfect people doing their best. But the one thing that those parents who truly get it understand is their kids are number one. And that's the one thing about our country, Trish, that we have gotten away from. Every generation up until this one, the parents, bottom line was, I'll sacrifice anything for my kids to have a better life. I'll make sure that I don't get a car right now so my kids can have a better education. I will work two or three jobs if I have to make sure my kids have a safe place to live. That was the way that my parents raised me, and their parents raised them. So every generation got better until now. Now we have a generation of narcissists, of people who think nothing but themselves, about power, and they will put our kids in debt. They will make sure. I mean, we now see families being destroyed all over the place. They can care less because as long as their family is okay, they feel it's good. So we see a different type of leadership that we've never really understood or seen before. And I want for people to understand, when I talk about the far left, first of all, there are good people on both sides of the aisle, Democrats and independents. And I would tell my Democratic friends, there is a hard left hiding behind your good hearts, and they're taking advantage of you and the rest of us, and they're going to destroy our society. The hard left are the Marxists who hate God, they hate capitalism, and they hate the family unit. So you see what happened to my communities from the 1960s. They destroyed our families first. They gave our single ladies the incentive to never have a man around the house, to get paid every single week just by sitting around, never not to get a job. So what do these young boys grow up thinking? That a man, first of all, they never understand what a dad looks like because they never had one. And they think that the cool thing is just not to be responsible for anything. That they'll get their self-esteem by going out and beating up people versus have the courage. I would say the greatest thing I was taught growing up is the fear of failure, because I saw a dad that I respected. I did not want to fail my dad, my family, my community. So everything I did was reflective of how can I not fail? The fear of commitment is something that we now see running rampant. I was taught by watching my dad and my mom what it was to be a man that would stand up against untold odds to protect my family if I had to do that. So those are things that we're missing, and it's on purpose. I think right now, Trish, we're seeing at the border is on purpose, because what Marxists do is they love chaos. And we have to understand that, you know, as Americans, we kind of take things for granted that we want order. We want a system of expectations. And that's just where we live. It's hard to believe that there are people who actually, their goal is chaos. Last summer, the destruction of all these businesses across our country that never stopped. You're seeing at the border right now, you have these unaccompanied kids and all the misery these young people are going to have to deal with. Sex trafficking, abuse. They come here. Some will never see their parents again. But guess what? The hard left could care less. They love chaos. So we have to really wake up and understand.
Let me jump in. You say the hard left and you use the term Marxist. Do you think that there are a lot of, you're in D.C. now, you're working with all these folks. you know, we were under the impression as voters that Joe Biden wasn't going to be that radical. He was just Mr. Nice Guy, right? And don't forget, he didn't run on policy. He ran entirely on, I'm just, you know, a nice guy that you don't get to see that often, because I'm not going to suck all the oxygen out of the room in the news cycle. But we never heard really what his intentions were on policy. Now we're starting to see those unfold. And I would just ask you, I mean, are these Marxists just, you know, the people that are marching in the streets, or do you have people that have really been infiltrated by that line of thinking now in our government?
First of all, I think it's time for us to understand and do some homework as a country. We need to understand these ideologies. You know, it's interesting because you call somebody, you call out an ideology of Marxists and socialists, and people get all sensitive. But at the end of the day, it's real. The idea of Stalin and Marx, Karl Marx and Lenin, that's a real ideology. And it's all about hatred of what we believe in. It's hatred of our country. So, yes, right now, you see, we see a president that's weak, that's frail, and that's empty. He's an empty shell. In my opinion, he's an empty shell. But what he's done is surrounded himself with people who hate our nation. They hate our culture. So let's not be surprised about the conflict at the border. Let's not be surprised when they talk about taking away our rights, our rights given to us by our Constitution, God-given rights of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, but take away the freedom of speech, the freedom of religion, the freedom to run a business. Those are things that makes us who we are. And we have an ideology, my friends, if we don't wake up and recognize and be honest about this, and let's not tippy-toe around the fact that we have people who hate our culture. We need to stand up against it. So, yes, Marxism and socialism is anti-Americanism. And all we have to do is look at what's happened to Detroit, Chicago, Ferguson, any black community that again, I grew up at a time, all those cities I just mentioned were thriving middle-class Americans, black Americans. So I understand that I, from a perspective of 50, 60 years, growing up at a time when my community did what every community did in those days. We turned within. We focused within. We made sure our money stayed there. We made sure our leadership stayed there. And every single dad and mom made sure their kids were going to be living a better dream. That's not happening today because of the leadership we have in the Democratic Party. And I'm going to ask my Democratic friends to look around and see when did you think at one point that you have leaders who tell you you cannot go to church, you can't open your business, you can't put your kids in school. And yes, this is what the black community has been dealing with for 50, 60 years. So welcome to the party. We now see what these guys are all about. All right.
You know, I look at all these urban communities and I think okay. So I was just in Western New York for the last 4 days and I traveled throughout the area. And, it was amazing to me, Congressman, because I saw a lot of signs up for Trump, Pence. I didn't see any Biden signs, but the Trump signs were still up. I'm like, okay, guys, you know, the election came and went, but the signs were still up. It was a very rural community, very, very middle class, actually not even so middle class. The median income where I was is $34,000. So that's not a whole lot of money. I mean, they're talking about low income out in Oakland, California being below $59,000. So people are really struggling here. It's a mixed community, though I would say predominantly white, maybe around 8% African-American in the area. But what I was struck by was the schools were all back in session. Now, you compare and contrast that to, say, the inner city in Chicago or Baltimore or, you know, parts of Los Angeles, where you have a lot of black leaders that are running things, and yet they're all caving to the teachers' unions. Here's this poor little community, and they're back in school. So what's that about in terms of accountability? I mean, are people not demanding enough from their lawmakers? How do these lawmakers get away with saying, too bad, your kid's not going back to school?
And what I see, Trish, in 2020 is a great opportunity for us as Americans. And I think it's within us, within our DNA. We live in this freedom bubble. We kind of take for granted. We wake up every single day. Of course, we have our individual struggles. We all go through that. But we expect that we can put on our calendar a date in which we can work towards something, a school event or a business event. And we're looking forward to taking time with our kids and building memories and having retirement one day. That is the bubble of freedom. What we experienced last year was we finally have a chance to see what contrast looks like. Mothers who in the past could put their kids in any school they want to. And so they'll feel sorry for black kids that you know, they hear about it. They feel they have sympathy, but they were okay. Well, all of a sudden, when that option is taken away from all of us, when we realize that any of us are literally a signature away from not putting our kids in school, having to run a business, going to church, you know, we can start having conversations that we never have had before. We're now getting to that phase I call empathy phase, which is what America, where we do best. When we feel empathetic, we feel the pain of others and truly see ourselves in their shoes, then also we make decisions based on the bigger scale versus ourselves. So I think what's coming out of this is that Democrats and Republicans can have conversations that we just wouldn't have had before, because we realize that the hard left is against all of us. It is a heartless ideology that truly uses and abuses anyone to get power. And that's what we're seeing right now. In the process, and I'll just say this too, that what makes to the point you're making about the school process, what makes our country the most attractive place is that we have this culture that allows for people, no matter where they start, to get to the middle class, and my personal belief is the middle class is where you find the most service, the most faith, the most outreach. Because they know what it feels like to have come from nothing to get themselves where they are, and they appreciate it. They want to pull people with them. That's a very, very healthy and loving of class. What the left wants to do is destroy that any way they can. What they would love to do is what they did to the black community. They squeeze the middle class, so it goes from a 40% business ownership to 3.8%. The middle class is squeezed. It becomes more dependency and more of elitist. And those elitists depend on the dependency class to keep their power. So what we're seeing is the most dangerous thing for our country. And I'm telling you from someone who's seen what black elitists have done to my community is elitism. Black and white, it doesn't matter. These people care about nothing but themselves, and they will use anybody and abuse any group to make sure they keep their power. So what are we up against right now is elitism. Elitism loves the idea of
I want to just jump in, because what you're saying actually is incredibly powerful and important. This has nothing to do with the color of one's skin. This has everything to do with tearing down an entire society, the elites tearing down that entire group, black, white, whatever, male, female, whatever, because it helps enable them to get power.
That's it. And so we have to pull ourselves away from black and white and recognize those folks on CNN, they're elitists. It doesn't matter what color they are and what is their message. It's always divisive. It's always anger. Keep in mind how you feel after listening to those pundits on CNN and MSNBC. You leave them feeling angry, they're depressed, down, and that's where the emotion, the control of emotion happens. My whole thing, and I was taught this growing up, we control our attitude. We control what goes into our mind. I made a decision that I try my best not to put negative and divisiveness into my head, because I don't want to be that. I want to be someone who's always optimistic, always uplifting, because that's the DNA of America. We are a country based on our beginning of our faith that we take risks because we see the best outcome at some point in our lives. And we fall flat on our face, and guess what? We get back up again because we again see the best outcomes at some point. That's America. And what the left is trying to do is change who we are from that way. That spiritual foundation of optimism is what the left would love us to do. And I tell you, my friends, if you start to fall into that trap of being angry and divisive and mad at somebody because of their color or whatever, their gender, they've won, and you're going to be a miserable soul for the rest of your life if you don't get out of that. So I suggest turn those people off.
I want to go back to the story that you told me. So you were always, as a little kid, sort of told you could do anything, right? You want to be a marine biologist, you can go be a marine biologist. You want to be a congressman, you can be, I don't know if congressman came up when you were a little kid, but what was it, do you think, that was so vital and important? I know you said there was one person that tried to tell you you couldn't, which made you want to prove them wrong, and obviously you did. But You had sort of an optimism, it sounds like, surrounding you in your community and with your parents, where you weren't going to accept the idea that you couldn't do something?
Yeah, it's all about parenting. It's all about parenting. And it was a generation. That's why I have this passion to never let the left put my parents' generation down, or the ones that came before them. They were proud of who they were. They were about showing those who could not do that believe that they can do it. Let me give you an example of what that looks like. My dad was a World War II vet, volunteered at 19 years old, and went to the Philippines, came back, and he could not get his postgraduate degree at in Texas because of Jim Crow laws. Now, I ran across a bunch of letters, a box of letters, about a year after he passed, I ran across a box of letters, of rejection letters from colleges across the country that he had tried to get into but couldn't because of his color. I'm convinced of that because he was very successful in Purview where he went to college. But here's the way that generation looked at it. They looked at that, and he held onto that box, never talked to us about it, never said, this is what they did to me. They never went through that. They looked at that as motivation. They held onto those letters to prove themselves at some point. And I had chances to run across it. He ended up going to Florida. He went to Ohio State University, where he got his PhD. I was born there when he was getting his PhD. My dad got it in agronomy. My uncle got his in economics. They were both college professors for 40 years, business owners. We traveled the world. I was in Africa at 5 years old in the mid-50s because he was doing research there. Now, this is during the days of segregation, because we were not waiting for white people to say, you can succeed. We were doing it because we know we could. And that's how, in the days I was raised, you did not ask for respect, you did not demand respect, you commanded respect, but through meritocracy. You showed yourself your value. And by the way, that's why the military in sports has been such a transitional process for our country. Because when you get on a football field, a basketball court, or on a military field, you can care less about color. You just want to win. You want to survive. And that's what has made our country what it is. And now even the military, these leftists are turning upside down.
I was going to say, even the military now, they want to make sure they have this many women, this many blacks, this many Asians. I mean, I'm like, but wait a second, in special forces, when you're like, you know, banging on Osama bin Laden's door?
Well, see, the only reason it happens, they will never do that in football, by the way. They will never make
right.
those kind of...
Because football is capitalist, market-oriented.
Yeah, only reason they had to do it in military, because we don't see the results. We don't see the fact that women and men are killed because of this crazy nonsense of everything but meritocracy counting. Lives are being lost and destroyed when you put inferior people, inferior talent in the arena based on color, creed, or whatever it might be, instead of putting the best. And we see that in our school system, in our college system today. We have some of the worst professors and teachers ever in the history of mankind, because they were chosen based on their color, based on their gender, not based on how well they teach and how what the response is. So this is the downside of the hard left of Marxism, socialism. It's a theory that we never have a chance to see personally in our lives until now. Well, I'll say this. The good thing about this where we are right now as a country, we now see how literally incapable of leading and getting good success with this administration. That's why I said I think this is a great opportunity for us as a country. We finally have a chance to see contrast. The old American way we just came out of the last 4 years, in which policies gave our country the greatest economy. We had energy independence. We had the lowest unemployment in the history of our country for blacks, Hispanics, Asian women, veterans. Policies are making our country number one. Now we're dealing with the other side. These theories of socialism and Marxism. We now see why Cuba and China, those guys are not the place of destination for most free people. We don't want to go there to be free.
We absolutely don't. And I think what you're saying is very much a warning. I want to get to that in a second in terms of the tax and spend ideas that they're putting. I mean, $3 trillion in infrastructure, plus another couple trillion more coming down the pike next month in childcare expenses, et cetera. But first, Evanston, Illinois, reparations being handed out, $25,000 to a family that may have lived in Evanston during this designated time period. I believe it's 1919 through 1969, or had a relative that lived there. Is that, I mean, hey, who doesn't want $25,000, right, to put towards a home mortgage or home repairs? But what's really going on there in your view? And is that, I know you don't like it, but what's in your view sort of wrong with what they're trying to put forward? And they'd like to see it, I should point out, on a national level.
Well, they're going to run out of other people's money. That's the first thing. It doesn't work. The idea of freedom is that we can work hard to produce our dreams and live our American dreams. We should never be forced to have other people live their dreams. We should first of all understand that there is something called debt. That anyone who's gone through tough times, and I went through a process coming out of NFL, in which I came out as a cocky liberal. So I figured all I had to do was spend a lot of money and work real, real hard, and anything I touch would work. And I found out 9 years later, it doesn't work that way. If you get yourself in debt and can't get out of it, you go bankrupt. And I lost everything. So not only losing everything, but I'll say this, I'm leading us to someplace. It was the greatest opportunity and experience of my life, even though it was terrible when I was going through it, to leave my beautiful home out in Long Island, New York, with an in-ground pool and two nice cars in the garage, to a one-bedroom basement apartment with four kids for a short period of time, as a chimney sweep during the day and a security guard at night. And by the way, it's a lesson to that. There's a lesson to this. I did what I had to do because I was taught that way as a kid. That men do what you got to do. That's the only thing that's honest and hard to provide for your family, and eventually works out. So I look back on it now. It's a very humbling experience to be on a roof chimney, cleaning a chimney by somebody who just a few years ago saw you running on a football field. But it's humbling, number one. But the message that comes out of that, and I remember thinking this as in the middle of it, is this is going to be for my good. At some point, I'm going to be thankful that this happened. And now I can tell anyone who really going through tough times in this country, if I can do it, you can do it. That's the message Americans give to each other. And that's what we go through sometimes, our tough times. Now, to go back, now that I've gone there, I'm just trying to figure out how to get back to what your question was.
No, it's an incredible story. And I just have to say, Congressman, you really are an inspiration. And it's those kinds of stories that I think are so helpful to people, because when times are tough, it's like you just have to keep pushing ahead, and you have to know that you can, and you will do it. Otherwise, it's too easy to wallow in the negativity. And your story is an incredible inspiration and such a great American success story. Anyway, keep going.
And here's the thing: I think the message that, and we have to share more of our stories as Americans to each other. Because it's important for people to realize that we all go through it. This is what's called life. And what the left will love us to believe is that when tough times comes, because somebody's doing something against you, it's not your fault. Something is against you. God hates you. I mean, that they go through all this. When those of us who understand, first of all, have a foundation of faith, we realize everything that happens to us is so we can grow up. It's our trials that help us to become much, much better people. And then at one point, turn back with empathy and help others do the same thing. So that's what our country is about. It's a place of second chances. No place in the history of mankind is anything close to it. And so we have to get to that point. And my parents had a chance to just show me what that was all about. I just want to share this with you real quickly. When I can't continue, I think about little experiences I had with my mom and dad. One with my dad, actually two with my dad. I had a chance when I was about 10 or 11 years old. We would go back and forth from Tallahassee to Texas, days of Jim Crow, segregation. So the service stations had white women only, white men only, and the back had colored. That's the restrooms. And my parents never acquiesced to that. Matter of fact, I now realize that Dad would take off late at night and travel all night long to get to Texas, so that we didn't have to wake up and go to a restroom or anything like that. He just drove. Now, I remember 9 years old, we stopped at this restaurant. Mom had gone to the white woman's restroom, which she always did. And these two guys came and tried to break down the door to get her out of there. As a 10-year-old kid, sitting in the back of the station wagon, I watched my dad get out of the car and deal with them. not only did he deal with them, Mom came out when she was done, but it showed, first of all, as a young man, what men do to protect women. That they go up against unbelievable odds sometimes, and I saw my dad do it. Now, not that my dad was trying to give me an example. He was just doing what came natural to him. Here's the end of the story that finished up 50 years later. Because I remember at that, we went back home. They never talked about it again, never talked about how bad people are and all that. I just happened to be walking by my parents' bedroom when they would talk. Dad was telling Mom he was going to cut up the card of this service station chain and he was going to send it back to him. And then 50 years later, Dad and I were talking about, just before he passed away, about memories. And I said, Dad, remember this? And so I went back to the story I just told you. He said, yeah, I remember that. And not only did I cut up the card, but I've not bought a drop of grass from that station that's chained ever since that point. So for him, it wasn't not just the action 50 years before. It was the principle that this was something he made a decision with. Not that chain ever missed 1 cent of his dollars. But in him, with him, it was a principal action that he had to take because he made a promise to himself. And it was a remarkable lesson to me in terms of, you know, what that generation was all about. And that's why we have today, Chris, Trish, we have to today live on principle. We see these bad actors, you know, betraying our country, you know, going all around the world and caring more about China than they care about our country. We can't just continue to buy their product because it's convenient. We have to at some point be principled people, show them that we will stand on our principles and they will pay a price in this free market if they do not put us first. And that's one of the things we have to get back to.
It's an important reminder of how different life was, right, in Texas in the 1960s. I mean, really, we have come so far as a nation, and I think it's important for people to remember. And I tell my young kids today, you've got to appreciate the context and what Black Americans and women and lots of other minorities have been up against, but certainly Black Americans. And so the 60s were an important time, I think, in terms of being able to break through all of that. And yet, you know, I say this, Congressman, because what the nation did was meant to help, right? Again, the policies that were put in place, I don't think anybody was thinking, oh, well, we can just give people a little bit of money and break up their families and, you know, keep them down and they'll vote for us. I don't think it was that intentional. I think there was some genuine desire to make sure that they righted the wrongs of the past. But sometimes in order to make sure that you're righting the wrongs of the past, it's about getting out of the way, right? Government getting out of the way and allowing people to rise up in a real meritocracy, not one that has a bunch of handouts. So it's fascinating in that you think about what needed to happen, did happen, and yet then they layered on this policy that was quite detrimental and that you are arguing could be quite detrimental to the entire country right now. Blacks, whites, everybody in between. Because if you just give people a basic income or a handout, you start to really destroy people's ability to get ahead. I mean, is that fair? I mean, I think that they didn't, you know, I would argue that, you know, Johnson probably thought he was doing the right thing. It just, you know, happens to be the policy has consequences.
Well, Trish, I'm gonna have to disagree with that. I think this is on purpose. I mean, I do agree there are a lot of good people who get drawn into it, just like today. You have a lot of good-hearted Democrats who don't quite understand the leadership of their party is about bringing misery to other people. I think it's on purpose, and it's on purpose because at the end of the day, we are to break it down. We're dealing with a spiritual war, and how it's happened. Our country has been based on Judeo-Christian values, and there's a value that comes from that. It's the way we see each other. It's the way we treat each other. It's the fact that we are growing up. And by the way, our country has been growing up. There's nobody who's born on this earth today that has it perfect, that has all the wisdom, all the knowledge to make sure they're successful at 1 year old. They become that as they get older. In fact, as they learn their life, the lessons, they reflect on how they're treating people, how they feel about things. And they get better and better, those who are trying to live a good life. That's where our country is. You know, we started off where we had to prove to the entire world that slavery was wrong. And we lost 600,000 lives to prove that this country was not going to go there. So understand there's a spiritual war. And that being said, there are people who literally try hard to figure out how to make people miserable. And welfare, if you think through the process of having women to be dependent on government versus their husband, when you're breaking down the family unit by making sure that our kids are not being, they have no idea what respect is, have no idea how to think, that is being done on purpose. What's happening at the border right now, my friends, it's chaos down there. It's chaos. And it's all it takes is somebody with any sense of fairness, of sympathy, of caring for anyone, that you will not let that happen. But what they're doing, they're trying to hide it instead. By the way, that's what the communist people do. They hide their evil. They don't show it in front of people, but they do it on purpose because they love power more. So I guess my pushback on that is yes, there are a lot of good people getting caught up that don't quite get it. But just know at the very core of this, we're fighting good versus evil. And our country has always been able to overcome the worst because we've kept our values, and our values have been taught and shown and built within the family unit. So the more they break down our family, the more they break down the idea of having a business one day, having a good education one day, even having the faith, because you don't have a family, a team willing to fight for those kids to make sure that happens.
I think what I was sort of trying to say was I questioned whether people were deliberately trying to hold poor Black Americans back in the 60s. I don't disagree with you that it's so warped right now. And I think that there is a method to the madness, which is about power and control and keep people down so that they can't rise up. I mean, I think fundamentally the sort of economic message of both parties, they're really, really different. But what's fascinating to me, Congressman, is how the left has managed to take hold of the narration, right? Where they'll point and they'll say, oh, you're racist. In fact, there was a story today about some companies in Georgia, and they're accusing them of, you know, being racist because they're not standing up enough for Black Americans, voting rights, et cetera, et cetera. It's their fault. So that's a huge accusation, right, to level against any person, any company. And there's a fear in America right now that somebody's going to point and say, oh, you're racist. And so consequently, you have people basically like kowtowing. Okay, what do you want? What do you want? Anything you want, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez or whoever, Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, will do whatever you want because we don't want your wrath. And so in some ways, the marketing aspect of this has just like gone out the window. I mean, the left has won that. And I'm saying to myself, but wait a second. It seems to me that the Conservative Party has always stood for economic freedom, meritocracy, opportunity for all. And yet they're the ones being called racist.
Well, it's interesting because, again, remember, we're not talking with an ideology trying to find truth. And I was just having this conversation with a good friend of mine last night. This friend of mine, the last thing in his mind ever goes through his thought is a difference in somebody's color. And that's the way most Americans are out there, by the way. So what happens to a good person who's lived their lives trying to be the best, giving people an opportunity, and then somebody turns around and calls them racist? What's the first thing they do? Well, they back and say, wait a minute, how can you do that? This is what I do. This is who I am. So they spend more time trying to defend themselves. And at some point, we realize that the other side doesn't really care about the truth. They're trying to shut people down, trying to intimidate. And unfortunately, we have to get back to something I call old-style Americanism. It's called courage. We have to start getting more courage and more backbone. I personally believe that comes when you have faith, when you know that at the end of the day, that it's not all about you. It's about something bigger than you. And you're willing to put something, you sacrifice a little bit because of that. But we have to get back to having the courage to stand up for our country and to stand up against these cowards. These folks are bullies and cowards. And I saw them growing up in my lifetime. They used to wear white hoods. They now wear a black mask. They hide behind bureaucracy in a place nobody knows where they are. They have a good, safe job. They never ever think about ever losing their job. Professors, they get tenure and they sit there and our kids come through with their bushy tail and wide eyed, ready to build the great future. And they come out 4 years later in debt with a degree that means nothing and hating our country, while these professors sit there and live the life of luxury. So we have to recognize that the left has been little termites in our foundations for a long, long time. The good thing about 2020, and this is, I can't say this enough, just like 9/11, Pearl Harbor, sometimes it takes a shocking moment for America to wake up and start having conversations. The great thing is that we now see the difference in the last 4 years of hope, opportunity. Even though many people didn't like personality, we were free enough, we were hopeful enough, the personality meant everything. Now we're getting to the point where, you know, I don't know about you, Trish, I just filled my carpet with $37. I just spent $67 filling my gas tank up. That's an eye opener. We said, wait a minute, where did this come from? So
it's called inflation. And you know what, Congressman, when you spend that much money, whether it's $3 trillion on infrastructure or $1.9 trillion, you know, giving money to everyone you can possibly give money to, it causes inflation. Food prices up 3.5% in the most recent data, 3.7% at restaurants. Energy prices upwards of 6%. And housing costs are going up. I mean, these are the things they say, oh, there's no inflation in the core CPI number. I'm going to get wonky on you for a second, but you know what? There is inflation in the overall number. And what do people use? They consume energy, they consume food, they consume housing. So yeah, there's inflation and taxes are going up. And so far, I'm not seeing a whole bunch of wage inflation. So it means the cost of living is getting higher.
And Trish, we're only 3 months into this administration. I mean, that's crazy.
I'm looking at it going, is he crazy? I mean, this is like, you know, FDR on steroids. They want it to be this way. This is the new America. I mean, the new America that Congressman, we can't afford, can we?
We can't. But here again, what is the most important three words in the history of mankind? I truly believe this. It's called we the people. What makes our country so unique is that once we start talking, I don't care. You know, first of all, we talk, and the American way is to agree to disagree. We might disagree on stuff, but we still want to talk so we can get some solutions done. We are now talking more than we have in years, because all of a sudden, no matter what side of the scale we're on, we're dealing with the same issues, and we're getting discouraged. And believe it or not, what the left does not understand is that the American people don't like negative for so long. We're going to get sick and tired of this racist thing. And at some point, it's okay, enough of this, guys. You've called everybody under the sun racist. That means nobody's a racist. So at some point, they're going to implode. They don't realize, because when you have no God, there's no wisdom. They just see the next step is, how can I destroy? How can I mess things up? The next step. They don't realize that down the road, American people wake up. And so we're looking at, and this is my thought process. By the time 2022 comes on, we're going to have a landslide. Democrats will be waking up. Republicans will be more emboldened and say, I told you so. And so we're going to not only get back a strong House, I think we'll get the Senate back, and then we'll prepare ourselves to get the right person in to make sure we make America great again, because we now understand the difference in the two. And none of us want to have a life where we don't feel safe. We don't have money to get food. We're looking at our gas tank to figure out if I can take a trip or if I need to get back home sooner than later because the price might go up in the next 2 weeks. Those are the kind of decisions people are making now. And that's not the way it should be in a free country. So this is going to be good times for us as we come out of it. Just know that sometimes we need to have contrast and a little bit of pain to get there.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the truth, right? And these things tend to go in waves and ebbs and flows. And, you know, I agree with you. I really do. I think that people have kind of had it, and they will have had it. I mean, look, there was the sugar rush of those stimulus checks, but they can't do that forever. At some point, you have to actually get some growth and get people back to work. Otherwise, gas prices are going to keep going up. Food prices are going to go up. Housing goes up, and people don't have a way to pay for it. So I guess there's a little optimism, a light at the end of the tunnel, because there always is whenever I talk to you. And forgive me for calling you Burgess. It's just you and I have known each other a long time and we're good friends. You are a congressman now. I'm so happy for you. And you know what? I'm happy for the people of Utah, and I'm happy for the Republican Party, because we need more people that have that positive, can-do, attitude in the party. I really think there's a rebranding, if you would, that needs to happen. And by the way, like you know how much I loved Donald Trump's policies. And I think so much of what he stood up for was so important. And that needs to continue right now. And we can't let the left sort of characterize the right as they are right now as all bad and all racist and all a bunch of, you know, grumpy old men.
Having a chance to play in the Super Bowl, I experienced what it is that is to be on a team that literally was all in. And no matter what the position is, everybody wanted to do the very best and not let the rest of the team down. What you and I are doing right now, and Americans across this country, we're part of this great team. So let's not look at any of us being on the sideline. We're all on the field today. We have to do what we do best. Sometimes it's giving this voice that you're giving me right now. Sometimes it might be giving donations. It might be just rolling your sleeves and going out and knocking on doors. But as a team, we win as long as we know what the end game is. And our end game is freedom, to get back to what our country has been designed to do, and to understand that we have a hard left that wants slavery. They want evil. So once we understand that, we come together. And as old Al Davis used to say in the old days, just win, baby. We're going to get it done. So I look forward to that, Trish. I really do.
I look forward to it as well. Just a reminder, everybody can follow you on Twitter. They absolutely should, at Burgess Owens on Twitter. And of course, website burgessforutah.com. Look, keep up the good work. We all appreciate what you're doing. Thank you so much, Congressman Owens.
Thank you, my friend. It's good to talk with you again, for sure. Absolutely.
My thanks to Congressman Owens. He really is proof in so many ways of the American dream, and he is part of our future. And we as a nation need to recognize that it isn't the leftist Marxist approach that's going to get us out of these dark days. It is free market capitalism. It's a real meritocracy. It's individual responsibility. These are the things that matter most to the American economy and to American society. Thank you again for joining me.